From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. In July 2016, more than a year before the Me Too movement began, Gretchen Carlson made a bold decision. She sued Fox News chief Roger Ailes for sexual harassment. Now she's made it her mission to end non-disclosure agreements that muzzle people who sue over misconduct.
Do you see a conflict between what you're doing now and who that person was on Fox News?
No, because I know who Gretchen Carlson is. Not at all. I've been a fighter for women my whole life, and I've also been underestimated, and people have loved to put labels on me and think that they know who I am.
Carlson signed a non-disclosure agreement when she settled her lawsuit, which means she's been in the uniquely frustrating position of watching herself portrayed in the miniseries The Loudest Voice and in the movie Bombshell without being able to consult on or comment about either project. Carlson has turned her NDA-related anger into action, creating the initiative Lift Our Voices with Julie Roginski, a former Fox News contributor who also sued Roger Ailes, as well as Fox News and its then-president, Bill Shine, in 2017. Roginski and Carlson tell us how they're working to end mandatory non-disclosure agreements in settlements of lawsuits involving alleged sexual harassment and misconduct. But first on the News Banter, well, you can guess what's on our minds. Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my buddy and banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So we are looking at a moving target of what is going on in the world and in the entertainment industry right now. The things that are falling one after the other that are going to have huge lasting impacts in this business and that we don't know where it's going to go. And I'm talking about everything from the cancellation of sports events, but also just looking more narrowly at the TV and film business. Upfronts are being canceled and replaced. You know, CBS and what is now Viacom, CBS said they will not have their Carnegie Hall event. NBC Universal followed. I think that's going to be everybody by the time I finished this sentence. We are seeing movies pulled. Obviously, Bond was pushed to November, supposedly. A Quiet Place 2 pushed, we don't know how long. These are among the movies that are moving. And the studios have already spent millions, tens of millions, advertising these things. Theaters were already having troubles. Now they're having more troubles, undoubtedly. So we're looking at something that potentially remakes, you know, the economy of the world and the economy of this business.
Yeah, I mean, the entire culture industry of the world is shutting down. And the question is, what is the financial cost of that? And it's unknown at this point. I mean, it's billions and billions and billions of dollars. Just looking at the movie industry, Fast and Furious, that's the most profitable franchise that Universal Pictures has. They're moving that Fast 9 film from Memorial Day all the way into next year. And that's $1 billion that comes off the NBC Universal balance sheet for 2020. And that's just one film. I mean, think about all of the financial implications of no March Madness. That is a massive franchise for CBS and Turner. I mean, the Major League Baseball season is being postponed at least 2 weeks. There are 30 teams, and they are playing every day on television across the country. Every one of these decisions carries a financial price tag, and it's only beginning.
It's a ripple effect, too. And I think about people in this industry. You know, the entertainment industry really has gotten away with murder by calling people, especially in TV and reality, they call people who are really employees, really work for months at regular hours and get no benefits whatsoever. When those people are out of work, where is the support for them? There's no sick leave. This is where the policy vacuum screams, because as of now, the testing situation is a mess. People don't know how to get them in the first place. People are afraid to call in sick. The lack of policy is exacerbating this disaster. And it, I think, affects so many people in the entertainment business who work from job to job, you know, and or who may not, again, get benefits, even though they work very steadily. So, yes, we are looking at a complete series of disasters that are going to remake the business. And we talked a little bit about Bob Iger resigning last week, but, you know, I'm looking now at Disney stock in the low 90s. It was at 125 when he resigned. Not only do people, and are people now speculating whether he kind of just saw this coming and got out so that his tenure as CEO of the company would have, you know, a certain number at the beginning and a certain number at the end, and whether he basically sort of left the company in the hands of Bob Chapek, this new CEO that is unfamiliar to a lot of people in this business.
And Disneyland went through this awkward thing where they were open and they had an exemption from the governor. And finally, they came to their senses and closed it.
Let me, before we give up this cheerful conversation, turn to Harvey Weinstein, just to note that he has been sentenced, as most listeners, I think, know, to 23 years in prison. This was striking in terms of the judge just really throwing the book at him, seeing, I think, clearly that there was a long pattern, as he said, that this is a long pattern of misconduct. And then Harvey Weinstein seems to be almost, after people being doubtful about his health and his walker, decompensating in front of our eyes, rambling about how men are the victims of the Hollywood blacklist. And it's, you know, somebody emailed me this morning saying Dalton Trumbo is spinning in his grave for Harvey to be making these comparisons. But he does not seem to be doing himself any favors. And his lawyer, Donna Rotunno, wants to win some sort of award for, you know, calling the sentence obscene and cowardly. A lot of people covering themselves with glory here.
Yeah, the Harvey comments in court were bizarre because typically criminal defense lawyers will advise their clients not to say anything at the sentencing because that can then be used against you in the appeal process. But Harvey felt the need to make this rambling statement. And, you know, it's clear that this was a hefty sentence. The judge has not liked Harvey Weinstein from the beginning, from the time he was admonishing him for using a cell phone in court. The quote from Judge James Burke at the sentencing was, "This is a first conviction, but this is not a first offense," which pretty much sums up the view of Harvey Weinstein that, yes, he was convicted of these particular charges, but this sentence reflects the entirety of his reign of terror that he had for years and years throughout Hollywood and beyond.
And clearly with an L.A. district attorney after him, there are other offenses that remain to be looked at, what they do in this situation in terms of his appeal versus being extradited here and tried here. I don't know. But I will say that the outlook for Harvey Weinstein right now is pretty grim as a 67-year-old convicted felon. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. If you watched Fox News between 2006 and 2016, or even if you didn't, you're probably familiar with Gretchen Carlson. She was on the morning show Fox and Friends until 2013, when she started hosting her own show, The Real Story with Gretchen Carlson.
I may live in New York now, but I'm still a Midwestern girl at heart, and I want the show to reach out to all viewers coast to coast.
In those days, no one knew that Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News, was a sexual predator. But in 2014, Carlson began secretly recording her meetings with him, and in 2016, she sued him personally, alleging that she'd been fired for resisting his advances. Other women soon came forward, and Ailes resigned weeks later, collecting $40 million on his way out the door. Some of that drama was depicted in the Showtime series The Loudest Voice, in which Carlson was played by Naomi Watts, and in Jay Roach's movie Bombshell. This time, Nicole Kidman played Carlson as her lawyer warned her what she would be up against.
You're a man-hater. Learn to get along with the boys. You're sexy, but you're too much work. I have a whole list.
Will other women come forward?
In April 2017, Ailes was sued again, this time by Fox News contributor Julie Roginski. She settled and signed a non-disclosure agreement. That means, like Carlson, she can't talk about her allegations involving Fox or comment on the way she's portrayed in dramatizations of her story. Now, Roginski and Carlson have launched Lift Our Voices to end mandatory NDAs and other confidentiality agreements that keep sexual harassment allegations hidden. Such agreements allowed Harvey Weinstein to silence his accusers for years. And when Elizabeth Warren asked Mike Bloomberg about his company's use of NDAs, she arguably terminated Bloomberg's presidential campaign.
So, Mr. Mayor, are you willing to release all of those women from those non-disclosure agreements so we can hear their side of the story?
Through Lift Our Voices, Carlson says she and Roginski asked all the presidential candidates to pledge that they wouldn't use NDAs in their workplaces. Among the Democrats, all the candidates signed except for four: Bloomberg, Tom Steyer, Amy Klobuchar, and Bernie Sanders.
It's not just for the Democratic nominees. We also went out to President Trump and Joe Walsh. Actually, Joe Walsh was our first person who signed on before he dropped out on the Republican side. So we went to both parties because the whole issue of NDAs, sexual harassment, gender discrimination, all these ways in which we keep women silent are apolitical issues. So this is something that we need to come together as a nation to try and solve. It's not specific to one party.
I mean, yes, but have you heard from Trump?
No.
Okay.
But we have to ask. And frankly, that's why this issue will live, even if Joe Biden becomes a nominee, because he was the first Democrat to sign on to our initiative, which we were very grateful for. But the issue still lives because President Trump has not responded to us or signed on. And it's not just about presidential candidates. We just believe that if you're going to be the ruler of the free world, that you should be for women and that you should release us from being silenced. And men too, but the majority of us are women who are silenced.
And just to be clear, President Trump is enforcing NDAs both from the Trump campaign and also within the Trump organization, the same way Michael Bloomberg was a Bloomberg LP. So this is a bipartisan problem and it needs a bipartisan solution.
Yeah. Bloomberg also was sort of one of the easy, I had a harder time guessing why Klobuchar and Sanders didn't sign on. With Bloomberg, it didn't seem so difficult. Mm. I don't know if you got any insight into why.
We don't. We spoke to both their campaigns at length at a pretty high level, and we have yet to get a response from Senator Sanders as to why he won't sign on. And obviously, Senator Klobuchar is no longer in the race.
So, you know, we've seen some people just defy NDAs. Have you guys ever thought about just, you know, saying, hell with it, go ahead and sue, and defying them to sue you? I'm sure you must have.
Well, the onus really shouldn't be on us. The onus should be on them. Could we all dream about being able to speak freely? Of course. But at the end of the day, we don't have a choice. We are bound by these NDAs. And other women are bound by NDAs who are not, don't have the platform that we do to talk about this. So rather than looking at this retrospectively, I think we need to look at it prospectively to ensure that nobody else is ever silenced the way we have been from talking about their life story.
Right. And I mean, let's be honest, Kim. I mean, I think Julie and I would love to be able to tell our stories. How much time do you have?
Well, there are whole books for that. Know, yeah.
Well, right. Yeah, there have been two, right. You know, there have been a whole mini series and a movie done on it. So,
right.
You know, listen, it's incredibly difficult for us to watch these projects and not be able to participate in them because we can't even tell you if they're accurate or not. And our mission is not necessarily for the Julie and Gretchen show or the Julie and Gretchen story. It's for the millions of other Americans across the world who've been silenced. We're doing all of this work to release them and for our children. We're both mothers. And, you know, we thought we had fixed this problem in our generation, but lo and behold, we had not. And I am bound and determined, and I know Julie is as well, to fix this for the generation of our children. That's what's fueling the movement for Julie and myself. As to why we're not going to break our NDAs, I was the first person to come out at Fox News. I'll let you figure out what they might do. I don't think, then Julie and I have both said this, we don't want to find out what they might do.
Right. Well, certainly in that day, there was some very dark things going on in terms of, you know, sort of Harvey Weinstein-esque surveillance, only more so from what we've read in Gabe Sherman's book. Quite an operation. So that's been written about to some degree, and it would certainly scare me, I think. So I get that. Now, let me just talk about a couple of things that have happened. In California, there's been some legislation. I don't know whether you have a position on how good or not good it is.
Yeah, I actually came out to Sacramento to lobby for it about a year and a half ago. And that was when it was before Governor Brown. And it actually then passed. And it was a remarkable accomplishment. But then he vetoed it. You know, and then it since went through to Governor Gavin Newsom, which is a different story. These state bills, these are great efforts on the grassroots level and the local and state level. But what I've been doing for the last 3.5 years is trying to pass federal legislation as well, because that really, no pun intended, trumps everything else. Because, you know, what's happened now with a lot of these state laws is even though they've passed successfully, they get a test run in front of a judge. And the judge, because they're so clobbered with so many cases, they're like, well, if I have any out to still send this to arbitration so I don't have to deal with it and I can move on to the next 4,000 cases in front of me, I'm still going to send it to arbitration even though there's a state law in the books because there's no federal legislation, you know, making sure that I do this. And that just invigorates us more to realize that we have to pass the federal legislation.
And also, these state laws, Kim, they're very piecemeal in the sense that New Jersey has an incredibly strong NDA law, probably the strongest in the nation. Massachusetts, also in the Northeast, another good liberal state, allegedly, tried, a state senator up there tried to pass an incredibly distilled version of an NDA law, just precluding people using taxpayer dollars to settle lawsuits secretly and binding people to NDAs. That didn't pass. So people in New Jersey have a recourse that people in Massachusetts don't. There's only got to be a federal solution to this. If you don't have a federal solution to this, you are having completely unequal workplaces in all 50 states, which is just not helpful at all.
I wonder if this may or may not be a question where an NDA might come into play, but looking at the Chris Matthews, the situation that just happened so recently, I saw a writer referring to it as gray area harassment. You know, he's not assaulting women, but he's making women to varying degrees uncomfortable. I think that's the kind of experience that almost every woman who's ever had a job can relate to, the kind of assault that Harvey puts women through. And even the stuff that Roger Ailes did is like on such an end of the spectrum. But so many women have dealt with men in their faces, you know, talking about how they look, that sort of thing. Do you think that your movement is applicable to that? Do you have a reaction to whether Chris Matthews obviously was in the business for a long time and then he wasn't?
Not to pick on Chris Matthews, and I'm not sure whether Chris Matthews ultimately had to leave because of that very brave GQ reporter coming out and telling her story, which I know she's gotten a tremendous amount of pushback and death threats and God knows what else on social media.
Yes, tremendous blowback.
Mm-hmm. Awful. But Chris Matthews, in, over the last month alone, I think had a pattern of behavior that didn't necessarily have to do with Me Too, but just look at the Elizabeth Warren exchange, which to me was one of the craziest things in television I think I've ever seen. And I worked at Fox. He, you know, he went out and basically asked her whether she believed these women, this particular woman who said that Michael Bloomberg told her to kill her baby, quote unquote.
My question about him, you believe he's lying?
I believe the woman.
You believe he's lying?
Which means he's not telling the truth.
And why would he lie? Because just to protect himself.
Yeah. And why would she lie? I mean, that's the question, Chris. Why do you...
I mean, it was just a crazy exchange. I'm not sure whether it was because he made women feel uncomfortable or because he was no longer living in the moment that we're in today. And I think his bosses understood that that might be an issue for them.
There was also a 1999 settlement, a sexual harassment settlement that the company had done on his behalf, which has not gotten a lot of press. But here's my take on the whole thing. And I think when you've lived this so publicly, it's very frustrating to see people come out and cry over the fact that this person is no longer working at an institution anymore. I understand that the person they thought they knew is not the person that might be the person behind closed doors. So you can have two versions of the same person.
Right.
But for people to jump so quickly to say like, oh, he was such a, people are such great people and all that, you don't know who they are behind closed doors. You know, and both Julie and I faced that when we came forward with our cases. We had high-profile colleagues who said, well, that could have never happened. Well, how the hell do you know?
Yes,
You weren't in the room with me. You weren't in the room with Julie. And we weren't in the makeup room with Laura Bassett and Chris Matthews. So it's troubling to me that we're still not able to rationalize that and reason that in our own brains, that people can have two sides to their personalities.
So I assume you would hope that you know, starting at the extreme of the spectrum, we start moving toward the more the middle of a spectrum where that kind of day in and day out stuff that isn't even, you know, many people would say, oh, he said something, what's the big deal, becomes a bigger deal.
Yeah, it has to, because otherwise we're discounting and allowing that to pass through. We're not being militant and saying that if somebody says to you, I like your haircut, not what we're talking about. I think the conversations that Laura Bassett said happened were not on that level. I will tell you, in my unscientific study of all the thousands and thousands of women who have reached out to me over the last 3.5 years, the stories are rarely gray. They're so obvious and offensive. And every time I hear a new story, I'm like, okay, I'm just waiting for the next one, right? Because if a person does this kind of behavior, they usually don't just do it to one person.
Coming up after a short break, Gretchen Carlson can't say what she thinks of the way Nicole Kidman portrayed her in Bombshell, but Julie Roginski can give her opinion. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Julie Roginski and Gretchen Carlson about Lift Our Voices, their initiative to ban non-disclosure agreements that keep women silent regarding sexual harassment and misconduct claims. Carlson has her own experience with an NDA. She signed one when she settled her lawsuit against Roger Ailes, then the powerful chief of Fox News, for $20 million. That's a lot of money, but professionally, the price was high. Carlson has not had a job since. Carlson was a pioneer. She sued Ailes more than a year before the launch of the Me Too movement. She wasn't always seen as a fighter for women's rights. In 2009, Jon Stewart devoted an entire segment of The Daily Show to calling her out for dumbing herself down, claiming on Fox and Friends, for example, that she had to look up words including ignoramus and czar.
You didn't know what a czar was. How do you get a job on television if you appear to be one of those people who need to pin their address to their coat so a stranger can help them find their way home? Unless you're just dumbing yourself down to connect with an audience that you think sees intellect as an elitist flaw.
Obviously, you're a graduate of Stanford, you're a violinist, you're a very bright person. And I know you probably remember Jon Stewart sort of made fun at one point of the contrast between who you are intellectually and what I would be tempted to call the character you played on Fox News.
Mm. All I'm saying is, baby, Gretchen, come back. You don't have to stash your IQ in an offshore account.
Do you see a conflict between what you're doing now and who that person was on Fox News?
No, because I know who Gretchen Carlson is. Not at all. I've been a fighter for women my whole life, and I've also been underestimated, and people have loved to put labels on me and think that they know who I am. I'm doing what people who know me really well now have said to me, this is what you were intended to do, because it wasn't just something that I dreamed up when I filed my lawsuit.
And could I just jump in, because I was one of the very few liberals at Fox News, so I can speak to Gretchen at Fox and I could speak to what she's like right now. There's no difference. It's very easy to sit there and caricature what she did when she was at Fox and Friends, and Jon Stewart, certainly that was his role and his job. But you have to really understand the person and know the person and understand the pressures they're also under. And I say that as somebody who worked alongside her, but also, obviously, I don't think Jon Stewart would ever criticize me because of my political views. I mean, it's very convenient to criticize somebody because of what you think their political views might be, which, by the way, are not even Christian's political views. But, but you know, that question irritates me as somebody who worked there with her, because it comes up once in a while, and it's irritating to me because it continues this pattern of caricature that I think people try to instill upon very intelligent people at Fox News. There were some people at Fox who the caricature absolutely applied to. I just don't think Gretchen Carlson was one of them. And I think a lot of other women there actually were not part of that whole caricature either.
Well, thank you, Julie. I just would make sure that I wanted to add that I think if you go back and look, you'll see that I had small protests from time to time, but I had to be really careful. But I'll point you in the direction of the day that I walked off the set of Fox and Friends when they were talking about, you know, oh, women can just do everything now. Yeah, can you believe it? We let women do everything. And I said, oh, really? I said, well, if you guys are so great, then you do the news. And I got up and walked off.
Letting them play golf and tennis now, it's out of control.
You know what?
You know?
You know what?
She's out.
You read the headlines, since men are so great.
And,
go ahead,
you know,
take
it. It was tongue-in-cheek, but I think people who know me know what the messaging was. 3 weeks before I got fired, I came out in favor of the assault weapon ban, which I did a poll at the end of my show, and 95% of my viewers disagreed with me.
I think I saw that in a movie.
Yeah. You know, so I think now that people have seen stories, and again, this is where I have to be very careful as my brain's working on full speed,
right?
Overdrive.
What
as to
I
what
say?
I can say.
What can I say?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I think people will have a better understanding of the difficulties of trying to manage who you truly are and stay working.
Well, so speaking of seeing a movie, I haven't asked you about the movies. You've had your experience, Gretchen, of seeing yourself, I think. I mean, I don't know. Did you see yourself? I know you're not allowed to address whether it's accurate or inaccurate, and you weren't allowed to consult, and you were kind of just sitting there, I guess, waiting to see what, I mean, I've read somewhere that you can't talk to your spouses about this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you're exactly right. You know, I could not participate at all. And so I might have heard bits and pieces of what it might be in, you know, what it might be entailing, but I couldn't participate. I've had to divorce myself from being, you know, upset about that because I can't change it. And so that's exactly, I think, how we ended up with Lift Our Voices and all the other work that I've been doing, is because for me, it's the bigger picture. It's like, okay, would we have been doing a miniseries and a movie 3.5 years ago on sexual harassment? Not a chance in hell.
Right.
So I have to look at this from a positive point of view, that we're talking about this issue, and with big, huge, you know, movies and miniseries about it, it's only going to help move the issue forward. And if even a couple people come forward as a result, then that's a win-win. But Julie can, you know, she can talk about it.
I mean, I can certainly talk about it.
Julie, give us your review.
I can't talk about, I have a tiny, tiny part in it. I can't talk about my part, although my part is minuscule, other than to say I don't think I'm violating my NDA by saying I think the actress playing me had a scene where she's trying to get into something. I think they're full body Spanx, and I hate Spanx. So I just want to go on the record. Jay Roach, right. The one thing in this life I hate is Spanx. Why? Why me? Could have been anybody else, but why did it have to be me? But anyway, other than that, I don't think I'm a violation of my NDA. But in terms of Gretchen, Nicole Kidman is an amazing actress. This is not a knock on her at all. It's actually not a knock on Jay Roach or anybody else. I did not recognize the Gretchen Carlson that I knew from that portrayal. The Gretchen Carlson, whom I know today, but also whom I knew back then, was not somebody who was sitting around waiting for the phone to ring. Gretchen is much more courageous, and Gretchen is much more forward than this. And she was a much more holistic, and it is a much more holistic person than I think was portrayed. And I thought that they did not really capture her and her intent and her personality the way that I wish they would have.
From a macro point of view, did you feel like it got the idea across well enough that if you just are like, okay, it's not Gretchen, but it gets the idea across, or no?
As Gretchen said, and I'm incredibly grateful that they made this movie, because whoever would have thought they would have made a Me Too movie 3.5 years ago.
Right.
But I will say that the idea, hope that people took away from this movie, is that it takes one very strong woman to stand up when nobody else did, including me. I mean, listen, I didn't say a word. And I didn't say a word for months after Gretchen did. Mm. And even when given the opportunity after Gretchen spoke up, I still stayed silent, because it took me that long to get the courage to speak up. So I think it's important for people to understand that the courage that it takes for one woman to speak up when there was a culture of silence, that really shouldn't be discounted. And if one woman can do that on behalf of the rest of us, and I count myself lucky to have had a woman like Gretchen who came before me so that I could speak up, and so could, you know, myriad other women speak up, I hope that people took that away from this movie, because I think that's very important.
Julie Roginski and Gretchen Carlson are the co-founders of Lift Our Voices, which aims to end the practice of mandatory non-disclosure agreements. Thank you both so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program, and Paul Smith mixed the show. And we have special thanks this week for Kat Yore for helping us out. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.